You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly. I'm joined today by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. Today, tough new coronavirus restrictions came into force in different parts of the UK, including Greater Manchester. And it saw as Blackpool Towers lit up last night with an SOS message to the government saying that the Tier 3 restrictions are killing the area. Fraser, you talked a bit about in your column today about the sort of the side effects of this sort of long lockdown and isolation is having on people. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Well, we've got very different stories yet again in Britain and Sweden. While Britain is locking down, the Swedish government announced yesterday that all restrictions were to be removed for the over 70s. Now, in Sweden, the restrictions are always advice, but the rationale was very interesting. The over 70s had been advised not to take public transport, not to go into shopping malls, to basically avoid the risk of the virus. But they had this fascinating press conference where they said that they've concluded that after studying the effects of a lockdown, then the threat and the danger of isolation and loneliness for the elderly is greater than the risk of the virus. So that's why they say they're no longer discouraging pensioners from getting on public transport. And they also went on to show that loneliness and isolation has got real public health implications. You're more likely to get high blood pressure, you're more likely, 60% more likely to contract Alzheimer's if you've got a smaller social network, if you're elderly, there's links to cancer. And the funny thing is that Swedes are very good at winter. I've been going there for 20 years now, and I've always been amazed at just how well they do winter. Winters there are pretty brutal. And there are some places where pretty much the sun goes down in November and it comes up again in March. So you need to be pretty creative in how you look after people and how you stop them getting depressed. And the Swedes have worked out that physical contact, human contact, seeing people, being around things is absolutely crucial for helping all people get through the winter. Now, locking down in spring was all right for us. I mean, sure, it was difficult for a lot of people, but remember how beautiful that Easter Sunday weekend was. And you hear people say it was like one long garden party. I mean, sure, that's the most happy extreme of it. But you will struggle to find anybody saying the same about what we're about to confront. Now, in Britain, look at the way that the advice is configured. You've got SAGE Committee, you've got SPIEM that feeds into SAGE, you've got the Joint Biosecurity Centre. They're always the ones who come up with Tier 2, Tier 3 advice. But they look exclusively at the trajectory of the virus. Now, in Sweden, you've got the Public Health Authority. They look at all public health things, including the health problems created by lockdown. So this isn't about the economy versus lives. This is about saving more lives. And the Swedes have worked out that putting people into the equivalent of Tier 3 restrictions will mean not just loneliness and isolation for the elderly, but it will mean shorter lives as well, and far more likely to succumb to things like heart disease, which is by some margin the biggest killer in this country. I argue in my column it's food for thought. And we in this country do a very, very bad job of balancing the risks. Every time there's a press conference, we get shown lots of COVID graphs, not a single graph about the effect of lockdown on the economy or the effect of lockdown on lives. And I do wonder if anybody in the government is even making the calculations that decided to turn Swedish government policy yesterday.
I thought Alice Thompson wrote a very interesting column in the Times today just about how the publicly available statistics show the rise in people with suffering from mental health problems because of this. And I think there is a difficult thing, which is one thing this virus has done is it's killed spontaneity. Because you can't just say, oh, let's all go for a drink or whatever, because, you know, either you live in somewhere where pubs aren't allowed to serve alcohol, or you live in somewhere where you essentially have to book in advance before you can turn up. But it's also kind of killed long-term planning as well, because no one quite knows, you know, there is no date for victory over Corona Day. There is no sense of, oh, get through this, and then on April the 8th, we'll all be able to have a massive party. You know, I mean, I think that's interesting. In Scotland, though, there's been a big row, because Jason Leach, the clinical director of NHS Scotland, has essentially said, look, Christmas is going to be over Zoom this year, which I fear is, digital Christmas, I think, I fear is true. And people got very, you know, there's been a big row about what he said was misrepresented. I don't think it really is. And I think this is the point, which is there's a reason why there has been a festival in the middle of winter in Northern Europe through paganism and Christianity. It's because people needed something, I think, to concentrate in the winter on, to look forward to a moment. And I think that if it becomes clear that that moment isn't going to come for people, I think that that will further kind of lower the mood. I mean, the kind of massive question is, how do you find a way to raise morale? When everyone was clapping for doctors on a Thursday night, yes, they were clapping for the NHS, but they were also standing on their doorstep or leaning out their window, and there was a sense of being part of some community event. And in London, which isn't renowned for its sense of community spirit, I think lots of people probably saw their neighbours more on that weekly basis than they did normally. But I think it did provide a sense that people were part of an effort greater than themselves, and did provide people with some cheer. And I think the kind of question around this time around is, how do you do that?
And it's a depressing thought, James, but you mentioned that Scotland are having their own digital Christmas. There are two very depressing words to put together. Do you get the sense that we're heading to a digital Christmas in England?
I read about this a few weeks back. I think that in government, there is a kind of fear that if you tried to strictly apply the rule of six on Christmas Day, you would get kind of mass non-compliance. And it would be very difficult to put the genie back in the bottle there. I wonder whether you would be looking at some kind of compromise where the rule of six might be eased, but in an attempt to kind of control spread, what then people might say is, yes, you can have more than six, some small number more than six, but you mustn't travel from more than 5-10 miles or something like that. Because the obvious worry about Christmas is the idea that people kind of travelling from areas of high levels of the virus to areas of the country with low levels of the virus, you could end up spreading the whole thing around. So that is the challenge.
James, I've been asking myself when the argument is going to change in this, because right now, even if you look at the Andy Burnham standoff, that wasn't really about protecting Manchester's liberty. That was about getting more money from the government. Isn't that right? John, you followed this.
Yeah, that pretty much summed up. And that was why the argument was kind of quite ridiculous at times, because I think neither side really believed that the restrictions on hospitality would make that much difference. You know, if the government did, they probably would have negotiated faster or imposed them. And if Burnham did, he wouldn't have been quibbling over 5 million in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it'd be interesting to see if we get more sort of business backlash, as I sort of mentioned the intro there from Black.
Yeah, but the argument about lockdown, such as it is, though, has so far, I mean, the Burnham thing was about money. Rishi, get your checkbook out and everything's going to be sorted. And it's funny that since the pandemic started, I've woken up every day and I've read the Swedish papers, because the debate there is so, so different over here. The arguments made are completely, almost unrecognisable. And there, it's about public health. This is about how to save the most lives. And it just seems, in this country anyway, we hear some people, you mentioned Alice Thompson in the Times, writing about mental health becoming a problem. But it doesn't, but nobody in the Labour benches is mentioning it. I don't even see, I looked yesterday to see if I could find Age Concern in Age UK talking about the mental health impact on pensioners. There isn't very much done on that. Now, the Swedes regard this as such a big problem that it's time to abolish restrictions for over 70s. But here, the debate all seems to be, first of all, taking for granted the idea that these restrictions will combat the virus. Well, maybe they won't. But the only problem there is unemployment, and that can be resolved by money. Nobody really seems to be talking about the public health backlash. And I'm wondering, James, if you think that will change, or whether this is an agenda simply which has got no real champions.
Well, I think for the reasons you said about winter, the Swedes are better prepared for these kinds of conversations, and they're more used to thinking in these terms than I think the political class here is. One of the things I think is sadly true is I think some of the consequences of COVID, of the non-COVID related harms, I mean, to use the jargon term, I think some of those will only become apparent in 2022, 2023, 2024. I think, and I also wonder whether we will look back in almost in a generation's time and think, oh, you look at the graph, you can see when lots of problems began. Now,
right, but the Swedes can do it now. That's why their press conference yesterday, they said, look at the summer, we've done the studies, we can see these warning signs, and therefore, even though infections are rising in Sweden, we're not going to tolerate this for another day. The information is there now if somebody wants to champion it, but it doesn't seem that anybody does. And the lockdown skeptics are focusing a lot on the economy. They're saying, look at the jobs, it's going to be terrible business. That is true. But nobody really is saying, look, all people are not going to get through this winter under these restrictions. And I really do worry that we're about to have some really serious public health consequences that are going to happen simply because nobody was pointing them out at the time.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.